Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Cult of Gracie Radio. Tonight our special guest is Dr. Gloria Bram. I'd like to mention that Cult of Gracie Radio is broadcast on XXBN via the Blog Talk Radio Network. We are broadcasting officially out of Raleigh, North Carolina, because we are a media project of SWAP East, that is the Sex Worker Outreach Project. And I am Gracie Cassette, and I am speaking to you from Fargo, North Dakota. As I mentioned tonight, our guest is Dr. Gloria Bram, and I'm sure this show is going to be, well, as usual, interesting. But I've been a fan of Gloria's for a long time. I would have to say I read her, the first book of hers I read was Different Loving, and that's probably, I'd say, like 8 years ago or so, maybe 7, 8 years ago. Does that sound about right? Is that possible? Has that book been out that long, Gloria?
What's even scarier is the book's been out 15 years. That's what's scary.
I just shaved 8 years off your age. So. Oh, there we go.
I'm only 30, you know, because, you know what they say. I'm the new 30.
The new 30? According to Oprah, is that 40 or 50 now? I keep getting confused.
But I'm counting on the fact that, like, by the time I get to 70, I'll really be 16.
Excellent.
Okay. Excellent. I'm working my way back now.
That's okay. We digress a lot here. It's in the
okay.
So, my first introduction with you was Different Loving. And that book is, you know, I don't want to draw lines that maybe aren't really there, but for me that book was so much drier than the Gloria Bram I know and love now. I mean, it was a clinical kind of study book, and I guess I should back up and say that Different Loving is an investigation and a study into BDSM and fetish, a.k.a. different kinds of loving. And I had searched for the book because I had been toying around the fringes myself, but as a young woman who considered herself a feminist who was starting to find herself turned on by submissive fantasy, of course it scared me because I thought there must be something wrong with me. Why would I want to be treated this way? And there were places I could go to, and even in the beginning of the internet back then, I could hear lots of stories and sites where couples were promoting it, and all their pictures were, the biker-looking, leather-clad people, and I they talked about a lifestyle and these things, and I was like, wow, I don't know if this is real. I can't sort fact from fantasy anymore. So I went and I looked for a book that would explain what it is, was and isn't, and how normal or abnormal was I. And so Different Loving did help me with that. It was sort of calm down, take it a step at a time, look at what's out there without the sort of join us in the community and be one of us and be 24/7 and all of that. But since then, you know, as I've come to read your other stuff, and especially at your blog, you're far more, you're wisecracking, you're hysterical, and you're very smart, because half the times I have to go, am I reading that joke in there? Did she mean to do that joke? And I go, she's really smart. She's yanking my chain. So now I look for hidden messages in all of your blog posts.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. All right. So you want to know how did I get to be so incredibly dry and pedantic when I wrote Different Loving, and why doesn't it reflect more closely my diabolically playful mood? Is that what you're trying to say?
There was no question in there yet. I was
Oh my God, we haven't even gotten to the question.
Yeah,
sorry.
I don't know. Sometimes I have them, sometimes I don't.
Okay.
I guess what I was trying to do for people listening that maybe weren't familiar with your books is to understand that, you know, my perception anyway, and you can slap me upside the head with the rolled up newspaper, because as you know, I'm a submissive, I'd probably like it. And tell me if I'm wrong.
I would have to use something strong. Oh, sorry.
Oh, cool. That's
okay.
Cool. We can talk about that later.
okay.
Because that was a scholar's book, whereas, you know, which needed to have, you know, more of the academic lines than, say, your blog or you personally do. Right?
May I comment on that?
Yes, you may.
Okay. Absolutely. I mean, at the time, I come out of an academic background. I was actually teaching college. I was teaching English and creative writing at the time. And I was a poet, and I was pursuing a very straight career and all of that, and I was in academia. And when I first decided to write Different Loving, that's how I conceived of it. I conceived of it as another scholarly work because, you know, that's the kind of stuff I was doing. I mean, in my private life, I've always been a wild woman, I guess, you know, and always tended to say outrageous things. On the other hand, I can certainly rein it in. And I am at heart like a gigantic nerd. I mean, really. So it was my intention to write a scholarly book. But there was another reason for that, too, which is that there really were no big S&M books. There was Larry Townsend's book, which was, oh, my God, I can't even remember the name. The Master's Manual, whatever it was. It was like a big guide, the first guide, and it was really geared towards a gay audience. There was nothing for heterosexuals, and I was like you when I was around 30 and first getting into the scene, which was, oh, my God, I don't know if that's me, and blah, blah, blah. And being a nerd, there was no book out there that I could find in a library, you know, that would explain anything about it. In fact, nothing I could find in a bookstore either that satisfied my interests, which were heterosexual, and were not about protocol and leather per se, but which had more to do with, like, my own fetishes. So what we tried to do is, me being an academic, and my husband Will also, he's an archaeologist, being an academic, or at least with an academic orientation, that's how we approach the work. And that accounts for what you call the dry style. And the downside is that, yes, there are readers who maybe don't feel that book is as accessible as they wish it could be. The upside is that by taking that approach, it has allowed us to now be stocked, like, not only in bookstores forever, but a lot of colleges and universities purchase the text. A lot of sexology programs use it as a primary text because it has that feel to it. It has that kind of added respectability, if you will. So,
and it was for me, you know, I don't want to negate those qualities, you know, and say dry equal bad, but it really, because there were so many people, you know, and I don't say this that they were necessarily on a mission to convert me, mm-hmm. but I mean, they were very much pro, they were very much doing their own thing with
right.
or without understanding, but enjoying themselves, and they were very much like, jump on in, the water's fine, and I was like,
mm-hmm.
I need, nerdy girl, I needed to think about it, I needed to go, wait a minute,
uh-huh.
and I needed to, especially as a woman who considered herself a feminist, still do, you know, I needed to chew on that intellectually and say, how does this fit?
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew I couldn't just go do something and have that question mark in my head, because then I would, you know, that was going to ruin any experience I may have tried
right.
because of that. So it's you know, a very worthwhile book. But after I, you know, got on the internet more and you were writing, you know, especially blogging, and get to know this other side of you, it was like, you know, kind of surprising.
Was it? Okay. Well, you know, I had another book. I wrote another book a few years ago called Come Hither, which is still in print. And in that one, I'm a lot more playful and a lot more upbeat, and it's a lot more like my blog style. But again, you know, in that case, and really in the case of Different Loving, everything changes when you're working under contract to a major publishing house. I mean, the atmosphere is a lot looser now, and you can get away with some things, but you'd be surprised how fundamentally conservative they are at heart. Or at least I've been surprised. I mean, I've had, you know, other book projects just turned flat down because they felt they were kind of conservative, you know? So, again, you know, I have, as long as I've done mainstream publishing, I would say that I've written to that audience, or written to that expectation of really trying to, you know, be funny but not be too outrageous and not step on too many toes and make sure my book gets published, blah. And for that reason, I don't know if I'll ever publish with major publishing anymore, because I've kind of lost respect for them as well, seeing the directions that they've chosen to take.
Well, I don't know if you know, but we have I'm connected with a small press myself, Ephemera Bound, and, you know, being on the skirts of that, I know that I've tried to put out, we have a sex kitten book on BDSM, which is basically just individual, most of it was stuff that's already been on the website, but in just one place, and they can sit down and read it, pros and cons, personal experiences, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And just getting a press release out was a pain in the butt. Couldn't get it distributed through anybody because it has those words in it. And literally got the people on the phone who run those services and said, you know, why, who, what, where, what can we do? And they were like, you know, listen, if we put it out there, then we're going to be labeled spam, and then our whole business goes in the toilet. We can't do it. We just simply can't. And bookstores the same way, they seem to be clamping down because if one, you know, one mom or one kid or one person comes in with a complaint.
But it's, you know, it's really always been that way. It's not like they're clamping down. They're just, you don't, you know, I don't think that even the most literate readers and the most sophisticated, you know, book buyers and so forth really understand just, you know, how fucked up it really is in publishing. I mean, it is really a fucked up world. And when Will and I...
Whoops, hold on a minute there. We had to bleep you for language, and it's taking a minute to bring you back on, so hold on. Are you there?
I'm right here.
Sorry, we had to bleep you for the F word.
You're kidding me.
To recover. No, sorry.
No F words. All right.
No,
well, then I think you can well understand. You know, the scope of the problem.
Yeah.
The scope of the problem. You know, like we had one of the funniest experiences, although at the time really agonizing and aggravating, but in retrospect hilarious, was that we got banned from a Borders bookstore during where we had been invited to speak for Banned Books Week. Did you follow that? It was Banned Books Week.
I believe they themselves called it irony.
That's right. They were putting themselves on the back for being anti-censorship, but when the headquarters at Borders found out that the local store was hosting authors who'd written a book about S&M, headquarters said, we don't want to be appearing to endorse that book, and they canceled our signing.
It surprises you on one hand, and then on the other hand, you just go, yeah.
Right, and that was 1993. You know, and, I mean, there were lots and lots of moments like that. So it's a very strange and strained environment, and right now, you know, commercial publishing is really in a world of hurt.
Yeah.
A non-consensual world of hurt.
Well, I had Jack Happerkamp on from Libido Films a few years ago. And one of the things we talked about was that, you know, when you look back through the history, because I have a large collection of old smut, and, you know, nothing that we do now hasn't already been done.
Mm-hmm.
If it hasn't, it's because, you know, lusting over an iPod was simply because there wasn't an iPod then. It would have been, you know, the new electric toaster or, you know, whatever it was at the time. But nothing has really changed, largely in part because our human anatomy, tab A and slot Bs, haven't changed, and the brain is pretty much the same. But why are we still so shocked by, you know, stuff that we should know already? I mean, we have hundreds of years of documentation that BDSM and all of this has been around, kink fetish, however category you want to put it in. We know it's been around for, you know, ever, but we still act so shocked to find out it's here or that, you know, to act like it's some new discovery.
That is because I will boil it all down to you into one simple sentence, Gracie. People think sex is dirty.
No, get out, really?
Yeah, people think sex is dirty. I know, it's like unbelievable, but people think sex is dirty. And once they think sex is dirty, anything and everything you do that shakes up what they already think is dirty, right? If they already think the F word, you know, if they already think missionary position intercourse between two adults is dirty, or that, you know, then naturally if it's between two adults who aren't married, it's dirtier. If it's two adults of the same sex, oh my God, it's unbelievably dirty. If it's two adults using toys, in other words, bringing other partners into bed, it's dirtier still. And do you know what I mean? It goes on and on. And, you know, that's really how I view it. I view it that, you know, what's really wrong is that our basic assumption, that our cultural basic assumption about sex is flawed from the start. We believe that what's normal is reproduction. And I personally believe that reproduction is no more or less normal than sex for pleasure. Both of those are normal human characteristics, and not just human, but every species. You know, people seem to believe that the only times animals have sex is when they're, because they're consciously trying to have babies, or that's the whole purpose. Animals have sex for pleasure. Certainly, primates do. Certainly, our closest primate relative, the bonobo, does. And so do we. In fact, since we have the choice, we choose more often than not to reproduce when we have sex. If we were all trying to reproduce every time we had sex, we would have drowned in our own poopy. Is poopy acceptable on this radio network? Poopy.
You don't have to use the poopy.
Okay. So people have sex for pleasure, and we don't want to believe it. Now, why don't we want to believe it, or why do we still have this completely antiquated, bizarre, shared delusion? I would say that religion and government have worked hand in hand to maintain that status quo.
Well, longtime listeners of Cult of Gracie will hear, have heard me say this before, and I bet audiences at home everywhere are getting ready to say it with me now. Everybody poos, everybody screws, it's time to get over it. You know, it's a big philosophy here in the cult that, you know.
I like it.
Well, you know, we teach our children, you know, how to handle those bodily functions that need to go in the toilet, and teach them, and then we trust that they know how to do it, and if they don't do it in the middle of Walmart's parking lot,
mm-hmm.
Great. And I think sex should be the same way. We should teach our children when to do it, when it's appropriate, then leave them to it. It's none of our business unless they're going to do it in the middle of the Walmart parking lot. You know what I mean? That,
mm-hmm.
that there's a line. And
right.
And then redirect them. No,
right.
Honey, you don't do this right here in front of other people. You need to go somewhere else.
Right. You teach them about privacy, and I agree with you on that. Unfortunately, you know, I mean, I think that's why people are traumatized by sex, and I believe that people are traumatized by sex, and I'm not talking about violent sex, because anyone would be traumatized by brutality or rape or whatever, but, you know, people are traumatized by consensual sex sometimes, and I think a lot of that has to do with how they were raised, that they were raised to be phobic about sex, or women are raised to be phobic about their vaginas. Men are raised to feel insecure about their penises. And these are sort of unspoken, everyday secrets about Americans, is that men do constantly worry about, are they, you know, hard enough? Are they large enough? Can they go long enough? You know, they worry about it all the time. And women try to deny that there's something between their legs very often. Women, you know, all those numbers that you see on how many women have never had orgasms and stuff, they estimate that only like 2/3 of all American women have even ever had an orgasm. You know, I'm willing to bet that those other women who haven't had orgasms, it isn't because they feel good about sex, that most of the time it isn't any kind of a physiological problem, because those are actually pretty rare, but that it is a psychological issue, that they're uncomfortable with that part of their body receiving different kinds of stimulation, or too much stimulation, or oral stimulation, you know?
That's a tricky thing. I mean, my sister and I had a conversation a number of years ago. We were both at mom's house. Must have been like around the holidays. We came back as adults. We were spending the night there. Came back in a little, you know, a little drunk, dropped off, and in the kitchen talking. And she made some comment about something was sex, and I said something about something, you know, going down. And she was like, oh, God, no, I can't stand that. And I was like, oh, no, me neither. I mean, we both must have been in our early 20s. And I was like, really? You know, because I thought I was the only freak who didn't. She thought she was the only freak, and she was like, no. So we spent like about a half an hour completely three sheets to the wind in mom and dad's dining room discussing why it is that we didn't like it. I've since worked that out and realized that I'm a penetration girl, but I can now, you know, start with one and work towards the other happily. But, you know, do not like the doorbell guys think that, you know, if they push it harder, it will happen, you know, it'll arrive like the elevator.
Well, you know, that's a different issue. That's the issue of being with people who know what the hell they're doing. And that's another story of great confusion.
But you also have to know what you want. I mean,
you must know what you want, and you must know what your body likes. That's key to having great sex.
And I think that's the biggest problem for women is, you know, I was talking about this in a couple shows ago before, but, you know, men's genitalia is right up front.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can see where their thumb is and make that instant connection between, oh, that's what makes that feel that way. I can do it again and again and again until I'm happy. Women, unless you get the doctor's mirrors and the syrups, you know, it's much harder to see what you are touching with your thumb to say that's a good thing to do. I mean, it's a little more of a learning curve. And I think that, like you said, women being taught to almost pretend between their legs doesn't exist. You know, it's like it's airbrushed out of our minds, like the old man.
Uh-huh. Right.
That then we can't explore down there that much longer that it would take to figure it out, and then we can't tell a partner, yeah, I do like this, no, I don't like that, do that again, because we don't know what the heck it is.
Mm-hmm. And we don't expect it to feel the way it feels when we start touching it, and some women get pretty uneasy about that, I think. They really don't know what to make of it. You know, it's really tough. I mean, and think about it. You know, could you imagine if you had that attitude about your hand, your left hand?
Yeah.
You know, you just ignored it. You wouldn't touch it. You tried to sort of, you know, you kept it in a glove all the time. You know, you only took it out to wash it
one afternoon.
You only took it out to wash it once a day, right? You know, or maybe when you went to the bathroom, you let it peek out
a
little bit. You know,
only for a doctor visit.
You know, and then the only time somebody else was able to look at it was in the dark.
But I'm going to, I love that because it, as crazy and stupid as that sounds, that is an excellent analogy. I always compare in relationships the sort of thing that if your, you know, your committed partner to be were to say to you, you know, you can no longer go to Dart League, even though you loved it. You lived for every Thursday night with your friends to go to Dart League. And your new significant other said, no more Dart League. I just don't like it. It's not me. You're not doing it. You'd say, out of here to the curb, you know, to him
right.
or her.
Exactly.
But when they say that about, you know, wanting to wear women's panties, no matter which gender you are, or, you know, you need a little toy in the bedroom, we go, okay, you're right. Then I'll give it up. Well, how long is that going to last? You know, then they want to know why they came to see Sex Pros, you know. Gee, figure that out.
Well, if you want to get really deep, Gracie, I think it goes right back. You do. I think it really goes like to our reptile brains. I think in our reptile brains, you know what I mean by our reptile brain, right? That little primitive part of our brain that supposedly carries the genetic material of our, you know, evolutionary forebears and stuff. You know, in that piece of the brain, I think we are, like all species, programmed with a certain anxiety about reproduction. And how it translates in a human being, in my view, is, you know, this amazing, fantastic, infinite kaleidoscope of options from, like, you know, how you dress. You know, there was a study last year that discovered that, you know, around the time when women ovulate, suddenly their fashion sense improves for a brief window of time. And that it's completely subconscious. They have no idea. But during that time of the month, they make themselves more attractive. They tend to. You know? I mean, think about the implications of that. You know, I mean, we are programmed.
How can I get my partner to ovulate? Because he needs to.
Yeah, you know, they don't have quite the equivalent for men. I don't know. Maybe it was just testosterone is a very different substance from estrogen. But they, where was I going with that? Oh, crazy.
Reptile brain.
Reptile brain. Rapid. So, right. So I think that people do feel a certain anxiety about sex and a sense of competition when it comes to sex. Sex, they have to be good at sex. Somehow they understand that on some level their survival depends on it. That means they have to be attractive, they have to be desirable, they have to be functional in bed. Because on some very basic level, and all the, you know, you can attach all the intellectual philosophy you'd like to it, and people have on, you know, the whole philosophy of beauty and why some people seek it out and why some people are going for all the plastic surgery. And I think the answer really is, you know, goes back to that basic anxiety that is programmed in all people. When we reach a point where we lose sexual interest or no longer feel sexual, like sexual beings, for a lot of that feels like the end of the game, you know,
mm-hmm.
that you're no longer really part of life, that you've entered old age, essentially.
I have to break here and say that people are listening to Cult of Gracie Radio on XXBN, which is a media project of Swap East. Swap East is a sex worker outreach project in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is Gracie Bissette, and I'm broadcasting via Blog Talk Radio from Fargo, North Dakota. If you have a question or comment for Gloria, you can call us in at 646-200-3136. That's 646-200-3136. Chat room is open. I am able to read questions if you are too timid to call and you would prefer to type. But I am unable to respond to messages there for some weird glitchy reason. So one of the questions I wanted to get back to about was this, you know, if there's anyone listening who was like myself, a person, especially women, who you know, grow up with feminists and maybe some Dworkinism in their background, by the way, totally want to give a shout out to Andrea Dworkin if she's listening, because she got me thinking about most of the stuff. I never would have forced myself on these issues of what I liked and didn't like and what was acceptable to me without her. But when I bought into a lot of those ideas early on, obviously, if sex itself was suspect, being a submissive female was, you know, really scary. And I just wondered, do you have any sort of general advice for a person who feels that a submissive tendency or seeking pain in any way is somehow, you know, negating themselves as a woman, that it's some sort of self-hatred?
I think that submissive tendencies are as common in men as they are in women. So I think if you want to take a little more empowered look at it, you have to realize that it's not a female thing. It is a female thing to be socially submissive. That is acculturation, and that is patriarchy, and that is all of that stuff. If you accept inferior roles in the workplace, if you have dependency issues with men, etc., if you let people abuse you, you know, those are the issues I think that women need to work on. But when it comes to sexual choice, you know, you can choose to act. My view is, if you are a certain way, you only have one of two choices: to embrace who you are and do it in an empowered way, by making free choice, by making good choices, by making yourself happy on your own terms, or you can deny who you are and chances are never feel like a whole person. Always feel that there's a side of you that was, you know, unfulfilled and unlived, and that maybe you didn't fully live your life out. And I speak as somebody who's over 50, you know, and who's talked to plenty of people in their 60s and 70s and knows that there are a lot of people with a lot of regrets out there that they didn't have the balls to just accept who they were and act on it when they were younger.
Yeah, well, you mentioned earlier, too, that there's all, you feel that there's equal numbers of submissive females and males, and I don't know anything to study.
Absolutely.
In my business, I certainly ran into far more submissive males than women, but as a sex worker, you kind of have skewed numbers like that. And I one of the things I noticed that also seems very fitting with me and my personal life is part of the submissive thing for me and for a lot of my clients and people I've talked to since was the need that they have very stressful, not necessarily high-powered, but their work and their family life is filled with a lot of decision-making, and so being a submissive is a chance to walk away from that completely.
I think well, you know, that's sort of the archetype, but here's the thing. What made them think of submission in the first place? I'll guarantee you that they were jerking off to those fantasies when they were 12 and 13. Or dare I say, abusing themselves. You know, I mean, I don't believe...
That's fine, as long as we don't go with the F word, we're all right.
Oh, all right, okay. I don't actually believe it. I mean, I believe that absolutely submission would be a tremendous stress buster, that going to see somebody and getting to enact a sexual fantasy would be a wonderful stress buster, and that I'm sure at the end of the day of making a lot of hard decisions, they particularly enjoy submitting. But I can tell you I'm a dominant person, and at the end of my day of a lot of decision-making and hard work and huge amount of responsibility, I don't feel like going to serve someone. I feel like going to beat someone, but I don't feel like going to serve someone. So I think that it is a way of rationalizing a pre-existing orientation that it would be better if they just accepted that they're submissive and they love it, and maybe they're overcompensating in the workplace because they know they're submissive.
Yeah,
and you know, after a while I've known submissives like that. In fact, most of the male submissives I know are quite often will choose careers that are just unbelievable ass kickers, you know, and where they really have to, dare I say it, slave. You know, and they're very keenly interested in power because all kinky people are fascinated by power relationships and drawn into them. You know, they may not be explicit consensual power relationships where somebody's a mistress and someone's a slave. It may be where somebody's a boss and somebody's a worker. But, you know, there is a lot of power dynamic going on, usually around anybody who's kinky.
One of the most interesting conversations that's been kind of circling around, at least in the neck of the internet that I've been playing in the past few months,
mm-hmm.
is this conversation regarding professional DOMs, whether it's, you know, phone sex or, you know, live dungeon or prostitution or anything, but that professional dominatrixes of the female variety is the most popularly discussed one, are, quote, ruining it for real-life dominant women. Have you heard of any of this discussion, or do I have to spell it out some more?
No, not at all. They're not ruining it. They distorted it a long time ago. And not just women. They've distorted the guys. I mean, but that's not their fault. You know, I would say that it really has more to do with the way the whole sex industry has been structured traditionally, which is a very male point of view. You know, dominatrices, in my view, are another branch of female sex work, and they cater to a clientele which requires and demands and expects women to be the characters that they read about in bondage stories or SM fiction, or that they fantasized about out of magazines. You know, they all seem to envision, like, where does the image of, why do dominatrices all have to be, you know, in black leather and latex, for example, and high heel boots?
My guess is a comic book?
Not a comic book, but a whole literature around it and an art around it, pretty much created by men, pretty much, let's say, in the Victorian era through the 1920s. That's when a lot of that photography and drawing was first appearing of women who pretty much look like the dominatrices of today, oddly enough. And it became sort of a fashion, but I would say very much, you know, it was really women dressing up to please men. So, for example, when you have, you know, the lady who lives next door to you and right now is surfing the internet because, you know, her husband has a fantasy of being dominated and she goes on the internet to learn how to do it, chances are she's going to see, the only people she's going to see identified as, well, not just identified as mistresses, but as all-knowing, in the lifestyle 20 years, you know, with all the claims that many pro-doms will make, you know, advertising their services, their charms, their skill, their expertise, and their, you know, their superiority over not only all men, but all other dominatrices, you know, these women, you know, your next-door neighbor is likely to say, that's who I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to dress like that.
That may be the fantasy he has because of the literature and the expectations.
Correct. So, and the fact is, if you're getting into the business and you're going to be a pro-dom, you're not going to make a penny if you dress, for example, like me, currently wearing cargo shorts and a T-shirt and a pair of Bansko clocks, you know? I mean, men are not going to flock
market.
You think so?
There's probably a group of camping boys, you know, that has that grew up
this particular. Yeah, right. Anyway, very niche market. But what I'm saying is, you know, if you, I mean, so it, there are a lot of things like that. It's sort of like if you're going to make a living as a pro-dom, you better have a very nice looking dungeon, a dedicated space, and you better have great toys. Because that'll help keep guys come back, and maybe you'll even tell your clients the things they want to hear. Like, I fantasize all my life about putting men in female clothing. You know,
yeah.
Right? You know, which is sort of the S&M, which I think it's part of the, you know, it's sort of like the SM equivalent of. It's so big.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean? But that's what they're paying. Exactly right. That's what men are paying for. That's what they're getting. That's what they want. If the pro-dom is happy with, the, you know, her business and the man is happy with her service, I think that's a fantastic thing. I'm all for sex work, and I don't see any reason why any form of sex work. I don't see why any form of sex, transactional sex, open sex, swing sex, any kind of sex between consenting adults, same sex, obviously, transgender, whatever, you know, as long as it's two consenting adults, I don't think there should ever be any sort of legal problem with it. In other words, I'm for the decriminalization of all consensual adult acts, you know. But
the noise you hear is a standing ovation from all of us at Swap East.
Oh, okay, cool. But anyway, you know, but so it's sort of too late. I mean, I would like to kind of turn the tide because what does happen is as this world has been expanding, you get more and more wives whose husbands are saying, look, honey, look what I found online, and that's what I want, and you know what I mean? And the women don't have models. Because they can't be that thing.
Yeah, well, that's,
you know?
That's what I wanted to bring up in the next little round here. I'm going to mention again that this is Cult of Gracie Radio on XXBN, broadcasting via Blog Talk Radio. XXBN is a media project of Swap East, operating out of Raleigh, North Carolina. This is your hostess, Gracie Bissett from Fargo, North Dakota. I was going to say North Carolina. I'm lost already. Tonight, our guest is Dr. Gloria Bram, who is, I guess if you want to say where you're broadcasting from, you can let us know that.
Athens, Georgia.
If anyone has a question for the doctor, you can give her a call here at 646-200-3136, or if you're timid, you can type into the chat room and I will read your question to Gloria. Remember, I cannot type back. I want to get into this other thing is, okay, whatever your gender is, whatever your kink is, at some point you're going to have to bring it up to a partner. Let's say you didn't meet in the, internet where you joined a community for potentially, swinging or BDSM or cross-dressing. But, you actually met, at the Walmart and had a conversation, went to a movie, and now you're going to kiss, and now you're thinking of having this conversation. When do you think is the best time to sort of bring the kink out?
When you go to bed or when you start, canoodling. Whatever canoodling is to you, when you're making out, I don't think people need to come out with this big confession, I think that if you want it to sort of naturally grow in a relationship rather than be, a planned event, I think you just start by, you give them a pinch and see how they react. You threaten, you flirt about spanking, whatever your thing is, and you see how they react to it. And if they look at you and get all, uptight and say, I wouldn't, or don't do that, or I hate that, or, and there's no reciprocity, I think right away this is not a kink possible person.
And what if you've been in a relationship for a while and you've just sort of started to figure out that, like for myself, not necessarily this relationship, but once prior when I first started questioning my submissive side, already in a relationship. And so I didn't want to drop a bomb, but I was still questioning and I wanted to try, X and Y. I know that
most
to bring it up.
Yeah. Most people go the book route. They give somebody a copy of the story of O or, the Rocalaire, Sleeping Beauty series, or My Book Come Hither, or something, which I have these silly quizzes in it and stuff. But, they usually start with a book and then they test the waters and say, I'm interested in this stuff. Are you interested in that stuff? Or did that turn you on? Now, if it's something where, you really need this and you're committed to your partner, so in other words, if you're not going to be doing it with your partner, it's going to throw the whole relationship into confusion, then you really need to sit down and just start telling them about things that you like, things you need to try.
As hard as that was for me, I think it was harder for him to hear because he didn't know what to do with it because it was, we had 3 years of, it was sort of coming in one day and finding that your partner has moved on you and there's another family living there with a note, you have to go somewhere else. It's like, what? Where? And I think he honestly wanted to try and we didn't work out for other reasons, but I remember his wanting to investigate with me, but being completely thrown off track. So what has that conversation and they're in the position of, turning to the internet or looking for help?
I think the best way to have that conversation is not just to have it as an intellectual conversation, but to introduce things when you're being intimate. Like to be in bed and say, would you tie my wrists? Or can I tie your wrists? Or, to actually start doing some things. Because one thing you'll discover about people is if you just present it to them out of the blue, and they're just bringing their rational mind to bear, it sounds weird. What we do sounds weird. If you're actually in bed and you start nibbling on your partner's toes And your partner really likes it, and you really start going on his toes. And before you know it, you know, he's moaning and writhing, and you're living out your wildest toe-sucking fantasy ever. You see what I mean? It's a little more organic. And I think, you know, I think a lot of BDSMers bring a lot of their inhibitions about vanilla sex and sex in general with them into the BDSM arrangement, that they still are very reluctant to communicate freely, even though we all say and know that communication is key and real honesty is especially important and trust is important. You know, it's easier to put, you know, to say that in words than to live it in action and deed. But I think that if you choose action and deed in, you know, in an honorable way, which is, you know, when your partner doesn't like something and that's when you stop. And if you need to talk about it, you need to talk about it. If your partner comes to you the next day and says, whoa, you know, all that stuff we did last night, I don't think I can deal with it. I think you have to remember that someone who can't deal with it, their feelings are not more important than your feelings. In other words, usually when it comes to sex, it's the person who's saying no whose opinion seems to matter the most.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that you force them, but what I'm saying is you have to confront them. That just because, you know, they might not like it, but you do like it. So where do you meet in between so both of you can be happy together? Because otherwise, you know, I mean, finish the thought? Okay, I'm sorry.
I'll let them know that I noticed their question here.
Oh, okay, I'll just finish. I just wanted to say that, you know, I have, like, tons of guy clients come to me, and they've been trying to get their wives to dominate them for years. But when they bring it up to their wife says, I don't want to do that, or I don't think, you know, that doesn't make you look like a real man to me. That's it. They never ask again. You know, they just live by their wife's feeling.
Is that
and to them,
their submissive nature, you think, or does it happen the other way around, too?
You know, to me, submissive nature is very different from being passive or accepting an unfair situation. I mean, unless you actually say, I agree, you know, I consent to things being unfair, I just don't believe in that. And I don't, you know, yes, it may be an overlap of a submissive personality into a social life, but that's not a good thing. You know, we still expect people to know, submissive people to know and understand what they're consenting to, and not to consent to things that just make them unhappy. So what I'm saying, though, is that women are, you know, a lot of my clients, and yes, submissive in particular, but even plenty of dominance, they just get to a place, or sometimes they just, because they feel guilty about what they want. If somebody else turns them down, they lock it away. Instead of saying, wait a minute, I'm equal in this relationship, my feelings matter, maybe you're being a bit of a prude. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with you. The question we have here is kind of related to what you're talking about. It's from a doodle duck, and he or she writes, why do you think bringing up kink to a partner in a long-term relationship is so initially threatening?
I think it's really threatening because I think, again, that people feel very guilty and ambivalent about wanting this stuff in the first place because they think it's weird or sex is dirty. Or, as I will, on my new mantra, we all poop, we all, what is it?
We poop, everybody screws.
There we go. Everybody poos, everybody screws, let's get over it. You know, but I think people haven't gotten over it. And I think they think, particularly when they're submissive, you know, that if they tell somebody, that person's going to think less of them. If they're men, that, you know, admitting you're submissive to a woman is, for some men, they immediately assume the woman will think they're less of a man. Even if the woman won't think so, the man on some level thinks he's less of a man for wanting to be in a submissive role. And so he may be afraid to tell her. He may be afraid that if he told her what he really wanted, she'd run away screaming. And I think early on in a relationship, we put all our energy into just establishing security and feeling loved, and we're much more willing to do and be whatever our partner wants us to do and be but that after you're with somebody for a few years, you, and especially if you're not happy, you start asking yourself again, what about me? What about my needs? Why have I not had them met, you know? Hey, Doodle Doc. That's a shout out to Doodle Doc.
Yeah, well, I think, too, that it's also threatening just simply because it's changed. And whether you're the person bringing it up or you're the person hearing it being brought up, it's threatening because it's a change. And I know from a female point of view, a lot of us tend to, when we hear a person saying, you know, I'd like to, whether it's the new steak restaurant, you know, or you know, the spanking title enters the bedroom, we start thinking, wasn't I good enough before? You know, that there's maybe that's wrong. You know, that we right away have our own anxiety thinking that we must not have, you know, if we've been in a relationship for 5 years and now he brings it up, you know,
well,
those
it's 5
years been disappointing.
It's very true. I mean, you know, I've known plenty of people, guys, let's say, who were transvestites. When they finally told their wives, it was a horrible shock to the woman, and she felt terribly betrayed. Or there are a lot of fetishists like that. They have, you know, long-term fetishes, and they never even tell their wives about them. Or long, you know, cross-dressing, or ladies' shoes, or you know, whatever it is, you know, or a fetish for rubber, or you know, and they manage to keep it secret from their wives, or an enema fetish. You know, the wife knows the husband goes in the bathroom for hours, but she doesn't know why, you know, because he locks the door. And really, I mean, I've really encountered an amazing range of stuff. And the women, I think the women, I understand and I feel sympathetic to them feeling betrayed, because what they feel is like, who is this person? It's like, I thought I knew this person so well. Here's this thing that he's kept from me, you know. And I think in a way it becomes not so much about the fetish. It gets really complicated because there's this feeling that he's been lying to you or been keeping a big secret about himself from you. And it doesn't really matter what that secret is, you know what I mean? What?
Yeah, it's a trust issue now.
Right, it's a trust issue now. And that makes it even harder to have a rational conversation. Because, A, it's like something sexually new that makes them feel insecure, and, B, you've betrayed their trust. So how do they get past that? So, you know, people are uptight about sex. You know, it wouldn't have that kind of effect on somebody like me, or I like to think like my life partners, because I think we expect change, and we expect people to have weird stuff they may never have talked about, or, you know, and what's the big deal, really? You know, why does it bother people so much when they discover some sexual secret about someone? So what?
Well, it may not have been a secret either. It may have been that person had been avoiding it and finally was comfortable enough in a relationship enough and realized, you know, I really want to do this. This doesn't make me a bad person. I want to do this now. So it may not have been a lie or a hiding, but more or less an epiphany on their part where they go, I'm now in a safe enough, you know, relationship and place with myself where I can acknowledge I like, you know, X.
All human beings are really eccentric. You know, put anybody under a microscope and their daily behavior is going to be pretty weird. You know, I mean, they all have their own way of doing things, their own little routines, their own little obsessions, their own little preoccupations, you know what I mean, their own little weird body habits, their own way of taking a shower and wiping their bottom and brushing their teeth, you know, probably slightly different from person to person. And nobody, you know, obsesses over that or freaks out about it, or, God forbid, you found out that your friend, you know, brushes his teeth with a, you know, a fingernail brush, you know? Would you feel that he was a filthy pervert and never want to have anything to do with him again? And yet, like, if somebody prefers...
Nail brush, maybe.
Okay. You know what I mean? I mean, who cares? So why do people care so much if, like, one guy gets more sexual satisfaction or one woman gets more sexual satisfaction out of kissing someone's behind instead of kissing their lips? Okay, so why does that freak people out? I ask you, Gracie.
I don't know. I mean, in my line of work, I often wonder. I mean, you always have the first-time client with the first ask on something that you haven't done before. And you always have that initial, I think, a human reaction, some sort of inertia or resistance to change until you stop there and you go, well, this is going to be X amount of money. Is that worth it? Is that good? You know? And then you kind of go, okay, and then, you know, quit checking in my head and go, yeah, I can do that. I don't know why he wants to. That's what the drive home is for, where I think about that, you know.
Right, and
that work for him?
Right, and in a relationship, are you different? I mean, you know, if it's your sweetie and it turns out that, you know, he wants, you know, that he has a particular way of doing something sexually that really turns him on. So that's just what turns him on. You know, I mean,
it was more intense for me then because I really wanted to be able to carry that through more than, you know, the hour allotted time. You know what I mean? Not like live a fantasy 24/7, but to be able to just be able to surprise him with it later without having to go off of what.
Right.
I think I'm a nerdy girl, so I'd read up on it. I'd try to figure it out. I, you know, wrap my mind around it and go, what button could I push later? You know.
I'm a very spontaneous pervert myself.
I have moments of that. I also have a slightly stalkerish side. So,
ooh.
You know, if I found out that he was a crossdresser, I'd have to go and find out what's his perfect color and get the panties and have them on the in my purse for the next time we went to dinner and just, you know, hand them to the table. You know, I'd like to do that. So it would be spontaneous to him as far as it's being sprung on him.
Right, right.
But it requires some forethought on my part to pick out the perfect shade of panties in the right size and make
them. Oh, okay. I agree with you.
We only have about 3 minutes left, so now we have the choice. We can continue to talk a little past, or we can start to wrap things up and give you plenty of time to mention your sites and projects. It's totally up to you how much time you have left in your evening.
Do you have any more burning questions?
Well, I do. I could talk to you for about a week and a half, but that doesn't mean
I'll
be back either.
Why don't I come back?
That would be great.
Okay.
What I'll do is I'm just going to mention again that this is Cult of Gracie Radio, broadcasting on XXBN via Blog Talk Radio, and that XXBN is a media project of Swap East, which is located in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is Gracie Bissett, and I'm broadcasting from Fargo, North Dakota. That's a lot to say in less than a minute.
It sure is.
Some mouthful. This has been Dr. Gloria Bram, and I know that you do have a website and a blog, but if you want to list out your URLs for people, I believe it's GloriaBram.com, right? Is the website?
That's my website is GloriaBram.com. I'll spell my name. It's GloriaBrame. But my blog is what's happening, and my blog is GloriaBram.typepad.com.
And if you go to cultofgracie.com, I've been negligent somewhat, but I will get my post-show notes up there, or you will find a posting about this show, and you'll be able to find Gloria's information there. You mentioned that you're not really working on a book right now. Is that correct?
No, I am. I'm always working on something. I am definitely working on a book. Not working at it at the rate I'd like to be working at it, but working at it. So when I have a publisher, I will probably put something up on my blog about it. If I have a publisher.
I'm sure you'll get one. Is there anything project-wise or your pet project-wise that you want to mention?
No, I don't want to plug a damn thing. I have a lot of stuff going on. There's a Museum of Sex that my school is opening in, I hope, in August in Las Vegas. That's a project I'm involved with. I'm on their nominating committee for various things. And so I'm very proud of that, and I hope the museum opens and love the people at my school, which is Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality, which I can't praise highly enough, and which takes an open-arm attitude to sex workers who are nerds, too. And,
yay!
And I'm on the Project Against Domestic Violence on the Committee for the National Leather Association, and that's another project that's close to my heart. So
to have you on and talk about that sometime, sure.
That would be cool.
Got about 20 seconds left. I think Joe's calling in. Hold on 1 second here. We have one last minute caller.
Ah!
You have a go ahead, caller. It says Swap East. Is this you, Jill?
This is you, Jill.
Do you have a question for Gloria?
I want to say great show, and the click to talk button works.
He wanted to say great show and what?
Great. I really love the show, and I found a new way to join the show. You can hit this button that says click to talk.
Oh, okay.
Oh, cool. Well, you're on with us now live. Thank you.
I didn't expect it to work, so I kind of feel guilty for interrupting the show.
Well, make up a question real quick for Gloria before she goes.
Gloria, if you gave colored underwear to a boyfriend, what color would it be?
Me? Oh, it's got to be pink, of course. Pink.
Gracie, what color would you give Gracie?
Oh, it would depend on his eye color and his build. I'm really, you know, see, this is how nerdy I get, you know. I'd have to figure out his astrology sign, you know, I'd really have to wrap my mind around it.
Oh, but wow. Just add some frills, that's all.
As long as they're panties, he probably wouldn't care. I mean, I'm overthinking it again.
Well, you see,
well,
I guess
thanks a lot for your time, Gloria. I will get in touch with you to have you join us again, hopefully before the holidays.
Thanks, Gracie. It was a pleasure. You were the bestest. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Are you still there, Jill?
I'm still there.
All right. You want to help me say goodnight from Cult of Gracie Radio on XXPN?
I do.
All right.
I do. We haven't been on the radio. We haven't been on the radio together in a while.
No. Oh, looks like
how
in the
would
room.
You,
they don't realize
how
that
would
I'm not
like
streaming.
How would you like to do it? It's your show.
How would I like to do it? Well, we should really talk off air about it. We can come up with a song or something. We'll come up with a jingle, and then everybody can sing along when they hear it.
Well, you know, I've got some spooky kind of cultish sounding music on the board.
Well, we'll have to play with it off air because I don't want to ruin it for anybody. So I'm going to sign off now.
Are you sure?
I just told you I overthink everything.
But this could be your chance of your own theme song. I mean, Renegade Evolution has her own theme song. She's not even a host.
Yeah, I'm just going to call you back on your own line in 5 minutes off air. So
okay.
On the count of three, we'll say goodnight.
Okay.
Good night, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie.
Good night.